Radio Drone. This is
Radio Drone, and I am Steven Seagal, Josh Hadley. I am here with Brad Jones.
Hey, what's up, man?
And Alex Chowski.
Hello.
I can't do the Steven Seagal thing the whole show.
I was just trying to be Steven Seagal movie character actor.
Ja Rule?
Not that one.
Oh, okay. Yes, if you guys can't tell, after the Adam and Eve promo, this is a very Seagal New Year. We will be looking at the Steven Seagal filmography. We don't normally look at actor filmographies. In Seagal's case, Brad, I'm making an exception.
If you go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, you get free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs, 50% off of a single item, and a free mystery gift. It's not a mystery to Steven Seagal, but it's a mystery to Josh. So go to adamandeve.com. Drone.
I can't do that for the whole show. It's really hurting my throat. Brad, you and I grew up on Seagal, so we need a little background for how we tortured Alex over the last week. Really, the only Seagal movie he saw was Under Siege 2. Not a good one to start with. I made him watch all 15 of Seagal's theatrical films and a couple of the direct-to-DVD films over the last week.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of Seagal. I'm like halfway through Fire Down Below right now.
Oh, good luck.
Hey, he made it through Against the Dark and On Deadly Ground.
I made sure to start with Against the Dark and Half Past Dead, so I had a point of, well, it will never be that bad.
We did that with Sarah, like, about a year or so, or it was shortly after Machete came out, and we watched part of one of his, like, A Dangerous Man, I think is what it was called, part of one of his direct-to-video ones, and we found out that Sarah had never seen a proper Seagal movie before, and we're like, really? And she's like, no, and we're like, okay, you see this guy on screen right now? Yeah, this is not the person that we grew up with.
not at all.
So in the span of like 2 or 3 days, we watched most of his theatrical ones.
After a while, Alex went back and watched them in relative order.
Yeah, I just made sure to watch the crappy ones first. So
so we start with Above the Law. I did not see Above the Law in the theater. Above the Law, I didn't encounter until HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, Movie Channel, something like that. I caught it on paid cable, so I saw it uncut. I saw it after Marked for Death, unfortunately. So Above the Law, I didn't like as much because Marked for Death had already set the bar a little too high. Your thoughts on Above the Law and Steven Seagal playing Nico Toscanini?
I'm kind of like you in that. Above the Law is something I appreciated probably more so the second time I saw it, because I had seen Out for Justice was the first movie of his I saw, and then I saw Marked for Death and some of the other ones, and then I had gone back and seen Above the Law, and Above the Law is very much a different kind of movie. Andrew Davis really does for Seagal in that what he did with like Chuck Norris and Code of Silence. It's more of a straightforward cop movie than say some of like Seagal's other movies. It's very much a cop thriller. And I didn't know that going into it, so I was expecting more so something like Out for Justice or Marked for Death. And that movie, it really wasn't that kind of movie, so that threw me off the first time I saw it. But then in subsequent viewings of it, I certainly appreciate it a lot more. I think it is a very good cop thriller.
And I believe the way Roger Ebert put it, and I can't disagree with him, but I can't 100% agree with him. He said there is way too much plot going on for a simple action movie.
There is.
Yeah, there certainly is.
So, Alex, Above the Law, your thoughts as you're going to be kind of the control group in this, since Brad and I grew up with this guy.
Yeah, we're biased.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Above the Law, it was just pretty good cop thriller, like Brad said. I mean, nothing spectacular. It's not like this terrific, great movie that everybody should rush out and see, but it's not bad. It's pretty representative of its genre.
Yeah, I prefer Code of Silence, but Above the Law is pretty good. When you have a movie where the two cops are Steven Seagal and Pam Grier, you're going to find something to like.
And Pam Grier looking about as hot as she ever could.
Absolutely.
Oh, she does.
Pam Grier was great in this. And then you've got Henry Silva as the creepy CIA agent. Seagal actually takes quite a few licks in this one.
I was about to say that. It's one of the few ones where Seagal actually gets his ass handed to him in a couple parts.
And then he gets the interrogation scene where they're sticking the sodium pentothal in his veins and all that.
Yeah.
This is the one that I think would throw everybody off if they knew what Seagal was now and you go back. This is the most un-Seagal-like of his movie.
I completely agree.
With the exception of Machete.
We will get to Machete. But see, I don't consider that a Seagal movie.
No, it's not.
That's a Danny Trejo movie that has Seagal in it, but we'll get to that. Then we go to Mason Storm in Hard to Kill. My issue with Hard to Kill was the plot is absolutely ridiculous. I do not think Hard to Kill was a good follow-up to Above the Law. The plot is stupid. It requires so much coincidence. And it starts with the terrible one-liners.
I'm going to take you to the bank, Senator.
The blood bank. I love that line. That line's great.
I didn't enjoy Hard to Kill as much, but I didn't see it again until after Marked for Death. So I just kind of went, okay, it was just not a great one, but still Marked for Death is awesome. We'll get to that.
What's great about that line, though, is he doesn't say it to anybody. He's just staring at a TV that's turned off.
Yes, that was just for him.
Yeah.
And you know you're a badass when you're making one-liners to yourself.
Hard to Kill, I think, is okay. I don't have a problem with it being stupid, because as long as it does stupid well and makes stupid entertaining, then I'm totally fine with that. Same thing with coincidences and stuff like that. As long as they do it well, that doesn't bother me. And it didn't bother me in Hard to Kill. What honestly bothers me about Hard to Kill, I don't like it in an action movie when the lead villain just simply gets arrested.
You yes. need a death, right?
I hate that. I find that to be such a cop-out. I hate that with a fiery passion. And this movie does that. And every time I think about Hard to Kill, that's one of the main things that comes to my head, because that is just such a cop-out. I really don't like that.
Although the way he toys with him at the end there before he gets arrested is fun.
Yeah, that was fine. That was fine if it just paid off and it doesn't.
With the shotgun in his mouth?
With the shotgun in his mouth. Yeah, that was fine.
And just, I gotta say, I love William Sadler as a villain. William Sadler was an awesome actor.
Yeah, he was great. He was fantastic in it.
And Hard to Kill made way more money than Above the Law did. So I think at this point, Warner Brothers was starting to notice, we've got a movie star on our hands, that this guy wasn't a fluke. And that was solidified in 1990, also in 1990, with Marked for Death and him playing John Hatcher. Or I believe
Hatcher.
The way I want Hatcher dead. I want his family dead. And if you can't kill him, I go and kill him. And then I kill you. Screwface is a great villain, or should I say villains, plot twist.
But I love that twist. That twist freaking got me.
Let's hope there's not triplets.
Yeah. The thing about Marked for Death was, I believe the way Alex put it on Facebook was, it's an hour and a half of Seagal killing everything with a dreadlock.
It's about time.
Yeah, and?
Although it occurred to me, thinking more about it and talking about it today, because it's all this evil Rastafarian gangs, which are also in Predator 2 that came out the same year.
Yeah, right.
Apparently there actually was a serious problem with Rastafarian gangs back then.
It had a pretty good story. Great cast. Great supporting cast.
Oh, yeah.
It had great one-liners that didn't feel forced. And a lot of the one-liners didn't feel as forced as, say, a Schwarzenegger film of the same era did.
I agree with Josh. The one-liners in that movie came across really genuine, and that's why I like Steven Seagal, is that Steven Seagal, he's great at playing that part. I mean, yeah, every now and then you get a blood bank type line like that, but other times, though, it really seems like something that character would say, you know? Outside of the fact that it's an action movie and you have a lot of one-liners in them, Steven Seagal is so good and so genuine at just kind of slipping those in there so quietly that to me a lot of times it comes across like, you know what, that's probably something that guy would actually say.
So Alex, you being the control group, Marked for Death, was it just Seagal killing Rastafarians?
Yeah, but it was hilarious.
It's fun. I love Marked for Death. Marked for Death's one of my favorite movies of his. Screwface is a fantastic villain. But the real quick though, but the funny, and Alex mentioned this on Facebook too, the funniest line in the movie, if we're talking in terms of unintentional hilarity, is when Danielle Harris gets shot.
Yeah, Elizabeth Grayson from Highlander the series plays the her Raven. Mom, too.
Highlander the Raven, when she goes, Johnny! They hurt my baby!
My baby!
It's all in slow motion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's my thing with Marked for Death. I just think it's a genuinely good film. You've also got Keith David. You get to see Steven Seagal slapping the holy hell out of a really young Danny Trejo at the beginning, too.
Yeah, just tossing him in the trunk.
Danny Trejo would get his revenge 20 years later.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Trejo is almost unrecognizable in this. He's so goddamn skinny, too. But I saw Marked for Death in the theater. It's the first one I saw in the theater, and it just blew me away. I mean, that is, before 90s action movies to me lapsed into self-parody, unintentional self-parody, I think Marked for Death is one of the perfect example of what a good 90s action movie was.
I agree. Marked for Death, again, is one of the first. It's probably the second one of his I saw. I didn't see it in the theater. My dad and I were big Seagal fans. We watched action movies all the time anyway. But Seagal for a while there was kind of our guy. The first one I actually saw in the theater was Under Siege. The ones prior, just on HBO, or we rented them.
Prototypical of everything that was going on with 90s actions, the one-liners specifically. But it's a very good example of them. I mean, there's a lot of 90s action movies out there that don't reach the level that March for Death set for them.
He breaks a lot of bones, too.
Oh, yeah, he breaks a lot of dudes' arms.
And there's a lot of gorgeous women that are naked in Marked for Death. That was a good selling point.
And it was funny, Alex was asking me last night, like, why did Screwface keep calling everyone a blood clot man? Blood clot basically means bloody tampon. It's calling someone that in Jamaican is a slur that's basically attacking someone's manhood. And then he's just like, oh, okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
Did the twist get you? Or did
the
you
twist? I didn't expect the twist. The twist did get me.
It got me too. I remember being a kid and being like, whoa, well, I didn't expect that.
This is also another one where Seagal took a lot of hits. Screwface kicked the crap out of him at one point.
Well, that one ended, that confrontation ended pretty quick. I remember seeing it for the first time and he cuts his head off. And I remember being sort of like, well, that was fast. But of course, that was the first time I saw it. So I didn't expect like, oh, okay, well, there's two. All right. Okay. All right. Now it all makes sense now.
You got me, movie.
And then the movie just ends right there. Let's hope there's not triplets, and then credits roll.
Also, I really like the music, and I mean the score to this one. Just look at the montage getting their weapons ready and putting the cyanide in the bullets scene. Yeah. I really like the score to this one. It was very 1990 without seeming kitschy.
Yeah. No. I agree with you.
All right, and then we move on to 1991, as Seagal is very quickly rising to movie star status with Out for Justice, where he is Detective Gino Fellino.
My favorite Seagal movie.
Mine too. That has been my favorite because it's so insane.
And see, I can't agree. It's a good one. Don't get me wrong. I prefer Marked for Death, but Out for Justice is it's really close to that. All you need to know to show that Seagal used to really be a real movie star is the interrogation scene in the bar.
That is, to me, hands down the greatest Steven Seagal scene of all time.
Yeah, he owns every second of that scene. And that
Whose
scene's
hot dog
a good
is
four
this,
minutes
huh?
long.
Whose hot dog is this yours? This is your trophy. I see all these boxing memorabilia up here. You a boxer? You gonna take a swing at me? And he keeps pushing the guy in the phone booth.
Reading that in order to secure a good rating and other releases of Out for Justice, the one shot they had to cut out was him putting the cue ball in the cloth in the bar scene.
So it just looks like cloth is knocking teeth out?
Yeah, that's it just weird. Looks like his fist instead of he's actually using a weapon.
Knock my teeth out, Gino!
That guy's just spitting out teeth, too.
I remember
8 teeth come out.
Siskel and Ebert reviewed it. Ebert was being kind of snobby about it. Like, I mean, he was laughing. He's like, well, okay. Well, hey, here's a movie that just says, okay, if someone does you wrong, here you go, Gino. Here's a shotgun. Just go kill him. So he was kind of laughing, but he gave it a thumbs down. But Siskel, on the other hand, was a big Seagal fan. Like, Sisko was like, he's like, you know what? I love this guy. This guy is great. This movie is a lot of fun. So props to Sisko for that.
And we can't not mention that William Forsythe was almost like he was in another movie. And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
He steals. His performance in there is amazing. Because you have just so much violence in the movie that everybody's okay with. Like when Seagal tells his parents that, I'm going to kill your son, they're just like, okay. When he tells Jerry Orbach, give me a shotgun and an unmarked. And he's
all right, okay, Gino.
There you go.
There you go.
You know, so you have this like just insane version of Brooklyn. And for somebody to be too insane for it, you have Richie. And William Forsythe does a great job with that.
And then after the success of that, Warner Brothers was still backing Seagal. They made Under Siege. With Gary Busey and Tommy Lee Jones and Clone Meany and pretty much just anyone else who was a decent name at that time. I saw Under Siege in the theater. I thought Under Siege was a great film. I really enjoyed the hell out of it. The story kind of makes sense even on an action movie level. It's got great performances by everyone involved. And Under Siege is the movie that made Seagal a superstar. That was his first blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Under Siege is a terrific film. I like
it. It is. That's a great action movie. It truly is. You have a hero that's smart, very funny, freaking handles himself, of course. And then you've got Tommy Lee Jones' over the top villain who's hilarious. And I love too that they give him Seagal the sidekick of Erica Eleniak. If you had a lesser person making this movie, that would have been really kind of dumb, but they make that work in this, having him have a partner who's a Playboy centerfold
who fell asleep in the cake.
Like, that worked. There was some really good chemistry between the two of them, like him explaining the difference between automatic and semi-automatic, and she does stuff in the movie. I mean, she's not just there, she does stuff in this film.
She kills Call Meany.
yeah she contributes to what is going on, and if a lesser person was put in charge of that could have come across really stupid, but in that, they really made that work.
Because of the success of Under Siege, Seagal's ego started to kick in. This was starting the beginning of the fall of Seagal. Mm-hmm. He started making demands. The only way, because Warner Brothers wanted him to do Under Siege 2.
Yeah.
He said the only way he'd do that is if they backed his directorial effort on Deadly Ground, which is our next film. Uh-huh. And as I think anyone who's ever seen that movie can see, that movie is a vanity project through and through, and it's a bad one.
I kind of liked On Deadly Ground.
Seriously?
Seriously.
On Deadly Ground, when you compare it to the last 10 years of Steven Seagal, it's not quite as bad as a lot of those direct-to-video ones. Don't get me wrong, I think it's bad. He's done way, 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 way worse since then. And yeah, I don't really like On Deadly Ground, but I can name a couple qualities of it I liked. I liked Johnny C's part.
Oh, that's the best thing about it. And it's when he's torturing the old guy.
Yeah, that part was good. I liked Dr. Cox. I liked Johnny C in the movie. I thought Michael Caine was fine.
Arlie Ermey and Billy Bob Thornton as thugs.
Yeah,
the only thing I didn't like about Michael Caine was his hair.
That was kind of weird. But I thought he was fine. I thought the shootout at the end was fine when he uses a soda bottle as a silencer. I can name a few parts of it that I like. I don't think it's a very good movie. It's like what Josh said. It's too much of a blatant vanity project, and with a lot of bad qualities of a vanity project.
And a lot of shoehorned in messages. The environmental message, where Seagal was falling in real life at that point, is so brutally over the top that it's almost oppressive.
In fact, the ending of the movie is just Seagal monologuing about the environment and
for five straight minutes.
Yeah. And it's showing like stock footage of pollution
and then you got this weird thing, and this would also carry on to Fire Down Below as well,
which was way worse than On Deadly Ground.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit, but he's just obsessed with hitting people in the nuts and overdubbing people going, "Oh my nuts!
Oh my nuts!"
I mean, everybody gets hit in the nuts in this, and they have like an, oh, my nuts, or oh, my testicles. And it's you serious? Well, and then On Deadly Ground was destroyed by the critics. It did not do well financially. So Under Siege 2 Dark Territory could have been Seagal's comeback. It could have put him back into the good graces of Warner Brothers. It's the only one I haven't seen, so I have no opinion on the film itself.
Really?
Yes,
really?
I've never seen it. But
it's not that bad.
But it did not do well financially, so it can be considered a flop.
It's nowhere near as good as Under Siege, though.
No, it's not as good as Under Siege, but as a diehard clone, you know, terrorists are on board a train. I like Under Siege too. No, it's not as good as the first one, but it's got some good moments to it. I like the kid saying to his, when Seagal gets kind of shot in the arm, he's like, "Oh shit, man, you've been shot." And Seagal's like, "What? This been shot? This ain't being shot." I liked Eric Bogosian as the nerdy villain. Everett McGill, I liked him. I thought the villains were solid in it. I thought it was entertaining. And at the end of the day, that's all it's supposed to be, is entertaining action flick. And I thought it worked. I did like how it got pretty over the top. I did like Seagal outrunning a train collision at the end.
Yeah, and the
that was just blatantly cartoonish, and that was kind of fun.
And this is the only time Seagal has ever played the same character twice. Well, the same named character twice. All of his early characters are basically the same character, but you know what I mean.
I did not like the fact that the introduction of this niece that he's taking care of in that one.
I can't stand Katherine Heigl, so she didn't really annoy me. She didn't. That was early in her career. She didn't really annoy me in that one, so I thought she was fine.
Then there was Executive Decision. It was sold as a Seagal movie. His name's all over the poster. His name is all over the trailer. It was sold as a Steven Seagal film, and he was very much just part of an ensemble.
Big part of that.
Yeah, the movie's 2 hours and 12 minutes, and he dies at the 42-minute mark. So that was a little atypical. I will admit, they got me. I didn't see that coming.
I did.
I went to go see this going, oh, it's a Seagal movie, and then going, wait a minute, Seagal died? We're not even no, Seagal can't be dead.
That's the only Seagal film I saw in theaters, but I saw it because I'm like, oh, this looks like a good action film. I didn't see it because of Seagal or Kurt Russell or any of the people. I just like, oh, action movie, I'll go watch it.
I did see it because Seagal was in it, but I had a feeling he was going to die early on in the movie. Because the posters did say, and Steven Seagal. It listed Kurt Russell, Leguizamo, Oliver Platt, and all these people, and then it said, and Steven Seagal. And there were rumors circulating that he was gonna die. So once they were passing through that little tunnel between the two planes, because I remembered that part from the trailer, which was all over the trailers, where
we're not gonna make it,
you are, which to me gave it away. So once that happened, I remember being like, they're gonna kill him off. And then they do, and I was pissed. Like, even though I saw it coming, I was pissed that they killed off Steven Seagal. So, for that reason, I didn't care much for that movie for a while. I saw it again years later and enjoyed it a lot more.
I liked it a lot more the second time I saw it as well, because, just like you, I was a little pissed that there was no Seagal in the last two-thirds of the film.
Yeah, that did piss me off. It did genuinely piss me off. Like, I did see it years later, and I was like, you know what, this is a pretty suspenseful movie. And I liked it.
Well, and then after that, then he went on, the same year of Executive Decision, to make The Glimmer Man, which, on the surface, is a very un-Seagal-like Seagal movie. It's a serial killer film. And we hadn't really seen a Steven Seagal hunting a serial killer movie, especially with a wacky black sidekick, yet.
Oh, but, yeah, he would get wacky black sidekicks plenty more times.
Yeah, but this was the first time he had a wacky black sidekick. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. I was just kind of meh on Glimmer Man.
There were too much of, like, there were too, I liked it better when it was in the theater than I did when I saw it years later, because I watched it again maybe a year ago when we were watching these movies with Sarah, and I was like, man, this hasn't really held up very well. the serial killer movie, but there's still plenty of, like, Russian mafias for him to beat up. The scene in the restaurant was good. The little thing with the credit card was good. That I love that scene in the restaurant where the guy keeps giving him attitude after Seagal has beat the crap out of him a few times. If I see you in here or your sissy beads, I'm going to kick your ass. And Seagal just throws him through a wall again.
And Brian Cox is awesome in anything.
Yeah. But it did have too much of the, where you could tell it was like, okay, Steven Seagal made them add this. Like the stuff like with his beads and how he looks like a monk more than
the herbal medicine store.
Yeah. Like this is, he just made them put that in there. It had too much of that, but it's not great. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's aged well at all.
Well, and he basically plays the same character in the movie Ticker, which we'll get to in a little bit. He more or less plays the exact same character, the cop who's deep and introspective, but does his job.
Same as you. It's just pretty much meh. It's not good. It's not bad. It could have
been a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we move on to what I think is easily his worst theatrical film, and that is Fire Down Below, which was another vanity project. He co-wrote it. He produced it. He didn't direct this time, thankfully. Fire Down Below is everything that is wrong with a vanity project.
I don't know. Yeah. The first 45 minutes I've watched have just been absolutely boring.
It's boring as hell. When you waste, like, Seagal in an action movie and Stephen Lang as one of the villains, your movie's got some problems. Like, I love Stephen Lang.
Oh, Stephen Lang is awesome.
I love Stephen Lang, and he's just wasted in this movie.
It's taken me 2 hours to watch the first 45 minutes. It's that boring.
I saw it in the theater, and it was painful. Oh my, Josh is completely right. In terms of his theatrical films, by far his worst. By far. That was, I found that completely, completely unwatchable. Like, it made On Deadly Ground look like Under Siege, because at least On Deadly Ground had some decent action.
It had things happen in it.
Yeah, it had things happening in it. Your climax wasn't, oh no, the church is on fire.
Mark Helgenberger does actually try to act in this, though.
I'll have to take your word on that. I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater.
I caught it on cable about a year ago, actually. My wife actually asked me why I was watching it. And I'm just like, it's Seagal, I guess. I didn't really have a good reason.
In just the first 45 minutes, the most he's done is fixed a porch.
What the hell? And they sum up the entire plot of the movie during the opening credits.
They do. In flashback, all sepia-toned.
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, and then that was basically it for Warner Brothers. I mean, obviously they'd come back later with Exit Wounds, but that was basically it for a few years. They'd had it with Seagal. They'd had it with his ego. They'd had it with his demands. He just kind of went away for a year and then came back with The Patriot, which would be his first direct-to-video in America film. It was still not a low budget. It was a $25 million film, and pretty much everywhere except America and Canada got The Patriot theatrically. We were the only ones that didn't, because I think Warner Brothers just said, we've had it with this guy.
Intended to be direct-to-video to begin with.
It wasn't intended to be direct-to-video, because I remember when that was announced. I remember reading that in Entertainment Weekly, that they announced that that wasn't going to be theatrical. It's going to go direct-to-video. And also they had something in there about that Genghis Khan vanity project he wanted to do for a while.
I remember that, yes. I watched The Patriot last night. It's like Glimmer Man. It's not good, but it's not bad. I mean, there are maybe only 3 fight scenes in it, max. And you get to see him playing a holistic doctor who also used to work for a biochemical lab and has to stop a militant group from releasing a plague on the United States. So you kind of got a Steven Seagal outbreak movie.
I didn't see The Patriot, and I mentioned to you before the show why I didn't see it. Because I remember it came on video, or no, maybe it was when it went on like HBO or something, and like my dad had taped it. And my dad said, like, he's like, well, I taped The Patriot. Do you want to watch it? And we'd been burned, you know, because we watched Seagal movies all the time, but Fire Down Below really kind of. So anyway, I said to my dad, I was like, you know what? No. I was like, Not After Fire Down Below. I just can't do it. I can't do that to myself. I just can't. I think my dad still watched it at some point and said it wasn't very good, but I never saw it.
I actually have not seen that one yet. That one is coming up next.
It being non-theatrical in the United States and didn't do very well on video, Seagal basically took a 3-year gap. He didn't make anything. I think that's...
Okay. I don't know. He probably pursued his music career at this point.
Yeah,
I think he did.
Yeah, he concentrated on his music career during this little downtime, and it took 3 years for 2001's Exit Wounds to come out, which I saw in the theater. I'm like, yeah, Seagal in the theater again. And Exit Wounds is, the first half's pretty decent.
It's got a good car chase.
It's got a good car chase. You know, I was excited when that movie came out. That movie really kind of, it kind of gave me back my, like, oh, yeah, Seagal. It gave me back those feelings, you know, like, yeah, we got a new Seagal movie out.
He's breaking people's arms and everything again.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, he's back. He's breaking people's arms. I was like, he's lost a lot of weight. This doesn't look like a vanity project. It doesn't look like anything like that. This looks like, you know, an early, like, Seagal movie. So I remember me and my dad were both like, all right, this might be really good. And we go see it, and parts were good.
There was a sea change that had happened for not only action movies, but Seagal movies. The first time when he's fighting the car thieves outside his car, and it's obvious Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon style wire work, I went, oh, no.
Steven fell into
wire work.
I know. I was so disappointed. The movie, I didn't think the movie was terrible. Like, it was a step up from Fire Down Below. I'll give it that, but still nowhere near Out for Justice or Under Siege. I mean, I thought he was good. I mean, he wasn't. I didn't think it looked like he was sleepwalking through it or anything. He was good. I think he really put forth a lot of effort into it. I thought he lost a lot of weight, and he was really doing some pretty funny stuff. I like Seagal in an anger management group. That I thought was funny.
I thought that was a very amusing thing too.
I think Seagal is the best thing about that movie, because the problems I have with that film are all the supporting cast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. By far, Steven Seagal is definitely the best part of that movie.
But see, here was what happened. Exit Wounds made a lot of money, and it struck a huge core with black audiences.
Well, that's
so
what they...
all of a sudden, Steven Seagal became like this white action hero to blacks because of Exit Wounds. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but he tried to capitalize on that with Half Past Dead. Before that, he had already made the movie Ticker, which would come out between Exit Wounds and Half Past Dead. Ticker, again, it was theatrical everywhere except here. So this would technically be his second direct-to-video movie here.
Is he the lead in that, or just a supporting character?
He's a supporting.
Ticker is not necessarily a bad movie, but it's definitely not good. Albert Pune has outright said he can't stand the theatrical cut. The theatrical cut's a mess. He's released his own director's cut, which I haven't seen. You've got Tom Sizemore and Dennis Hopper and Jamie Presley and Steven Seagal and Joe Spano and Kevin Gage. And you've got this really interesting cast, yet if you watch the trailer, they clearly tried to make this a post-Exit Wounds, let's hit an urban audience. Two of the actors, and I use that word loosely, that are featured in the trailer are Naz and Chile. I've never even heard of these people. Both of their characters are completely incidental to the plot, and they have a total of 3 minutes of screen time. And they are heavily featured in the trailer and on the poster. The audience they were trying to hit was, Seagal's a hit with black people. We put some black R&B singers in this, and we got a hit. The movie is all right. That's all I can say about Ticker is it's just odd.
I never saw Ticker. I didn't see Ticker, and I honestly didn't see Half Past Dead either, now that I think about it, or all the way through. I've seen parts.
I think Half Past Dead was pandering on multiple levels.
Half Past Dead is horrible.
Yes, it is. But they had a bunch of hip-hop actors in it. They were clearly trying to hit the urban audience, and they even have a scene where Ja Rule teaches Seagal how to say I correctly. That was cringe-inducing to me.
Yeah, because isn't he supposed to be, like, Russian or something in it?
Yeah, his name is Sacha Petrovich.
Of course
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, and he's an FBI agent deep, deep undercover to investigate this mob. So he goes to jail with the mob. Then they've, like, reopened Alcatraz. So they're all on Alcatraz, and then terrorists come in. And
The only thing good about it is Bruce Weiss. Bruce Weiss from Hill Street Blues. It's like he's in a different film. He's trying to give as much dignity to his performance as he can.
The other huge problem with Half Past Dead is it was cut to be PG-13.
That was going
to
be my next thing.
And there's
Seagal's
so many
first
times
PG-13, yeah.
You can see where the cuts are, where he like punches someone and then they die.
There's even a scene where he is sewing up a bullet wound in his shoulder, but we never saw him get shot.
That's why I didn't see it in the theater when it came out, because it was released with a PG-13. That's why I didn't go see it. And then once it hit video, I just forgot and never saw it. Like, I heard it was terrible, so I was like, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't see this. Because it definitely looked like it was trying to capitalize on the relative success of Exit Wounds. And Exit Wounds wasn't that great. I was sort of like, I don't know about this. So I just never saw it.
And then when you can't even get Seagal for Half Past Dead 2, don't even make it.
As far as I know, Half Past Dead is Seagal's only PG-13 film.
I believe so.
I'd believe it, yeah.
And then after that, after the real bomb that was Half Past Dead, Seagal was basically regulated to direct to video. And that's where he stayed for the longest time. And I haven't seen many of those. There was one direct-to-video one. There was this weird time in around 2006 to 2008 where Seagal had decided parodying himself was a good idea. Do you remember the Mountain Dew commercial he did around that time?
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he did the Onion movie.
The Onion movie is great.
Where he plays a character named Cock Puncher, who just punches people in the dicks, and he's got a huge rooster on his kimono, and he's hilarious as Cock Puncher.
Yeah, I thought the Onion movie was hysterical.
I agree. And I liked the fact that he was willing to parody basically what he'd become at that point.
Yeah, and he did it, and not only doing that, but doing it well, too.
And he was a surprise, because I didn't see the trailer before. I caught the Onion movie on, like, pay cable. So I just caught it one day, and I'm like, Steven Seagal's in this? What the hell?
I knew he was in the Onion movie because the Onion movie is one that was released like quite a few years after it was made.
Yeah,
so,
it was released in 2008 but made in 2006.
And it was released really silently because it wasn't until like end that I'm like, wait, they made a movie?
Yeah, like because I worked at a video store when it came out, so it hit the shelves. We actually got quite a few copies of it. So I took it home and watched it and thought it was hilarious. But I knew that he was in it because with it having been made for a few years, it was always on his – it had always been on his IMDb page for the few years leading up to its release.
And at that point, you were probably wondering, Cock Puncher?
Yeah, I was. I was kind of like, what the hell is Cock Puncher?
And then the only other of his direct-to-videos that I saw was Against the Dark where – okay, do you guys remember Silent Rage when Chuck Norris fought zombies? The only time he's really made a genre flick? I guess this was Seagal's genre flick, where he's a fat, out-of-shape, sword-wielding vampire killer in a dystopian future who loses 40 pounds every time an action scene comes about.
Yeah, well, no. He's only in half the movie.
Not even. He's maybe got 25 minutes of total
screen
time.
Oh, but the DVD sells it. Steven Seagal is in this movie.
Against the Dark was just an average vampire flick. Vampires with that run real fast are more like zombies.
It's vampire zombies that talk.
Yeah. Just all of a sudden, Seagal, whose character's name is Tao, comes in and occasionally kills somebody with a sword.
For the first 75% of the movie, every time it shows him, it's just his character walking to where the action is.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything in most of the movie.
And whenever they have him, they stretch the screen out to make him look thinner.
Yeah, they did that too.
And the weirdest thing, he's the reason the film got made. He stumbled upon the script and liked it so much, he's the one who talked the company into making it. And that's why he agreed to be in it. He thought it was a really fun idea.
I have only seen a few of his direct-to-video ones. I know he's made a lot. I saw Against the Dark. I saw parts of A Dangerous Man, which was terrible. I saw most of Pistol Whipped, which wasn't very good. And it's just, I can't, like, it's just, it's hard for me to watch those because they're just, they're painful to sit through because he's just there. He doesn't.
And he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He's out of shape. In A Dangerous Man, there are scenes where he's obviously reading the script, which is right in front of him on the table. Like, it is the polar opposite of the Van Damme direct-to-video movies, which, in my opinion...
Got better.
Like, when Van Damme went direct-to-video, his movies, in my opinion, they did get better. And I liked a lot of his theatrical ones, too, but when he went direct-to-video, he took that as an opportunity to get darker, to do much more brutal movies, to make some grittier flicks. And not only that, but his performance even got better with each movie, and which is like the polar opposite of the Seagal direct-to-video ones, which I can't get through them because they just depress me so much.
The only other direct-to-video one I saw was Driven to Kill, which was the same year as Against the Dark, and yeah, it's just generic and dull.
And see, a lot of the direct-to-videos, they all take place in Europe, because that was the only people that they could find financing for were European investment firms.
Yeah.
So they have to find a way to always make him the CIA agent tracking the terrorist over to Czechoslovakia and whatnot. And in a lot of cases, they couldn't even get him to come back to loop himself.
I saw part of one of them that did that, Attack Force, where they got a guy to dub him for like half the movie, and it was a guy who wasn't even attempting to do a Steven Seagal impression.
And then, see, right around this time, though, is where he had a lot of legal problems. He was accused of sexual slavery and importing girls for the purposes of sex.
Good lord.
So he had some legal problems, and I'm sure any movie that came with a paycheck was probably a sign on the dotted line to pay legal bills. Because he has a thing for Asians. He would bring Asian girls over. They would be like his personal secretary, and I think three of them all got together and filed a lawsuit against him saying that after a couple of months, he kept pressuring them if they wanted to keep their jobs, they needed to start servicing him. So he was charged with sexual slavery by bringing foreigners over for the purposes of sex.
Well, you know, everyone's got their kink.
I think at this time he was taking anything that had a paycheck attached to it.
I don't hold that against Seagal. If I had money, I'd probably do the same.
Fair enough. But then we go to 2010, and this is where I was arguing with Alex. I don't consider Machete to be a Seagal movie. It's a Danny Trejo movie that Steven Seagal is just really good in. He plays a cartel boss named Torres, who has one of the best death scenes ever.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of payback from Marked for Death. I wonder if Seagal even remembered Danny Trejo from the Marked for Death era.
I know, remember me, puta, you threw me in the trunk, you see? Yeah, like what I was saying like earlier about like finding a lot of his recent work just to be depressing because he's so blatantly not freaking trying in them. Machete, that wasn't the case.
He was having fun.
Yeah, when I saw him in Machete, he was having fun. Like, he was, I mean, granted, he's playing a villain, he's not playing the hero, and you're right when you say it's a Danny Trejo movie, but he was giving a solid performance in that. He was a good villain. He was, I bought it. I did. And Seagal, not the best at doing accents.
That's true.
I went along with that. Like, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm buying that he's Mexican in this. And you know what? Same thing in Out for Justice with the Italian accent, with the Bronx, Brooklyn accent.
Yeah.
He was very New York in that, yeah.
Yeah. I bought that. I did. I bought that. It might not be the most realistic in the world, but he sold it well in that movie. Like, I went along with it.
Because it's not a very realistic movie anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, if you can have a movie that's not realistic, but if you're doing the accent laughably bad.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo does not kill him. Technically, he commits seppuku.
Yeah, because he gets the machete in his chest, and he's like,
and he's just kind of like, what, is that all you got?
I'll show you. And he kills himself.
I loved Machete even without Seagal, but I was so happy the first time I saw the trailer for Machete, and it's and Steven Seagal. I'm like, yes!
Yeah, dude, theatrical totally.
Seagal again!
Yeah, exactly. And he killed in that movie. He did. That was like, even though, again, he's playing the villain, that was like having Seagal back, because that was, he had energy in it. He was alive. He was charismatic. He was that Seagal that... He was that Seagal that I had missed for all these years.
He was still big, though.
Still, you know what, though? I can deal with that if there's still charisma, if there's still energy in the performance, if there's still some semblance of somebody there inside that body.
A fat villain makes better sense than a fat hero.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's very true, too.
And then he went back to... direct to DVD for a while, and then he had, and I've only seen the first two episodes, his new surprising hit TV series, and by new I mean it was made 4 years before it was shown, True Justice.
I saw the first episode, and kind of like I just said with Machete, I thought he was really selling that.
I thought he took like a nice hit to his ego. He seemed to really put his ego aside. He lets a lot of the other characters carry the show, and he really just kind of comes off like their boss. And not like it's a Steven Seagal TV show that you happen to be on. It's, I'm part of this ensemble cast.
Yeah. It wasn't a great show, but I thought he was good in it. That was, again, like I was saying about Machete, I watched the first episode of that show, True Justice, and was like, this is... He's still kind of big in it, but it looked like he had trimmed down a little bit, thinner at least than he had in some of his other direct-to-video stuff. And he had energy, he had personality, he had a spark in him that had been missing for a while. I watching that, I thought like I did when I saw him in Machete. Of course, here we have him playing a hero in the show. So I liked that. I liked that about that. It was a Seagal that I had missed for a long time between that and Machete. So that was really cool. I mean, speaking of accents, in True Justice, he kind of does that thing that he sort of picked up in his direct-to-video era, which
is... Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yep.
Yeah, where he kind of starts talking like the person he's acting opposite of. Like, if he's acting opposite a redneck, he starts talking like a redneck. If he's acting opposite a black guy, he starts talking like a black guy. Yeah. He kind of does that a lot in it, which is a little annoying, but at least it actually looks like he's trying in this.
And then the show, which was made almost 4 years before anyone got to see it, although a bunch of the episodes were edited together and released as direct-to-video movies in foreign territories.
Yeah.
But then it plays on the Reels channel here in the U.S., and it was a big hit. They actually, 4 years after season one was shot, they picked it up for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
So Seagal actually has a hit now.
That's good. This is actually my first time hearing about this. I thought that just there was that slate of episodes right there, and that was it. I didn't know it actually got picked up.
Yeah, it got picked up, so they're making new they're actually running a contest on Facebook right now to win a walk-on role on the season 2 premiere.
Well, that's cool. That's ooh. I need to see more episodes of it. I've only seen the first two episodes,
yeah,
I guess.
I saw the first two were a single two-hour pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw them. But I also saw them before they went on Reels. I downloaded like the first video release or like a Russian release of it. So
yeah, I think that's what Brian had, was some kind of Russian release of it. And I watched it, and it's got holes like no one else's business, but
it's an average cable cop show, though.
Yeah, it is. And to me, honestly, what really made it for me was, again, seeing Steven Seagal have that spark back in him. That mm-hmm. made it that fact alone made it worth it to me. What happened with that reality show?
Steven Seagal Lawman?
Yeah.
I heard I think they picked it up for another season because it got suspended during the criminal charges of the sex slavery. They suspended it, so there's like a 2-year gap between season 2 and 3, I think it is. But then after that was all settled, basically he threw a dump truck full of money at the girls and they went away. Seagal in I Can't Stand His Politics, he is a big proponent of Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Texas. That absolute moron that doesn't believe in civil rights for criminals. As his job as a deputy, he was working with Arpaio to knock down a cockfighting ring. And they used a tank to bulldoze over the side of the building, the wall that the chickens were all up against, crushing all of the chickens they were there to save. So it was just sort of a way to go, Seagal. You couldn't have boneheaded that up anymore.
So instead of being cock puncher, he was more like cock crusher.
Yeah. Cock puncher indeed. Alex, as the control group, now that we've made you sit through all these, now do you see why Brad and I love early Seagal so much?
Yes, I absolutely do. In fact, I've become a fan of Seagal from watching these movies.
That's what Sarah said last year. Sarah last year said when we showed her Marked for Death, because that was the first one of his earlier ones that we showed her, and Sarah was like, what the hell? Where has this guy been? Like, this is a completely different guy than I've been seeing on TV lately.
Because here's the thing. When I announced on Facebook that we were doing a Steven Seagal filmography, overwhelmingly the comments were, why? Steven Seagal's a joke. Why bother? He plays the same character in every film. And I'm just
thinking... But it's a fun character.
It's a... Like what? He's the first action guy to play a similar character in every movie. Really? Come on. It's a fun character, and he does it well.
And in fact, that type of typecasting has come to be called Seagalism.
That's always been the case with action guys. Look at John Wayne.
Look at Chuck Norris.
How did Chuck Norris
not play the same character with a different name?
That's a very action guy. Not all of them are like that, but that's not uncommon. As long as they do it well, as long as it's really entertaining and they make some fun out of it, you know, and they're charismatic at it, I have no problem with that.
So we need to wrap up, but I love Steven Seagal. Steven Seagal movies are fun. Everything pre-Fire Down Below I'll watch if it's on cable. And I own most of them on VHS, and every now and then I'll pop them in and just watch them. Just because it takes me back to when Steven Seagal was a real actor.
Yeah, I agree. I do the same thing. I've got the early ones on VHS. I still get together with my dad every now and then, and we'll watch Out for Justice or Under Siege.
So, where can we find Brad Jones?
TheCinemaSnob.com.
Where can we find Suede Alex?
Marquis de Suede. Geekjuice Media.
He really likes that Marquis de Suede moniker I gave him.
And yeah, I had somebody message me that the other day. They're like, hey, Marquis de Suede.
my website is still down, so you can find me at
My website is still up.
Yeah, geekjuicemedia.com. So I'm going to say goodnight.